Thank you, Donna. It's a great pleasure to be here. And let me thank the organizer and the Fields Institute for inviting me here. So this work I'm going to present today is a joint collaboration with essentially Pierre Gaspard and other people, including David Sanders at UNAM and Raphaël Lefebvre, who is here. The program, in fact, is sort of implementation of what Joel advertised yesterday, that when you have a separation of time scale, you can set up I'll talk about setting up a mesoscopic description of the system that from which we can derive a transport equation. And so as a physicist, I would like to say it's implementation of the full program that Joel told us about, but of course there are some caveats that mathematicians are eager to find answers to. And I think we'll hear more about that in other talks. So maybe let me start. Can you see this? Yes. Historical context that I guess everybody here is aware of. Joel advertised, the framework will be to start from a Hamiltonian description of a system and see how far we can go into deriving the heat equation. And so what I would like to say is that came to realize here in this work is that some materials have a property that makes them natural candidates to implement this program, because you can think of these aerogels, in fact, as a gel without liquid inside, and so it's like a solid matrix with nanopores, and these nanopores are filled with gas particles. And now the idea is that the solid matrix is thin enough that you don't need to worry about it conveying energy to the gas particles. So let's just say that it's a kind of inert structure, if you like. And now you imagine that the gas molecules are in the real aerogels, they're not going to be trapped within the nanopores. But what we may assume is that they make many collisions with the walls of the nanopores, and then from time to time they move from one nanopore to another. And well, in the class of models that I'm going to describe, I'll just assume that they actually get trapped, which is a simplification, and allows us to disregard, say, mass transport, which was present in the models that Lai Fan Yang talked about yesterday. So what I'm interested in are models that that only have heat transport and no mass transport, and that's actually quite valuable in terms of decoupling the different transport processes. The point here is that there's a confining mechanism of local gas molecules that lets them reach local equilibrium before energy exchanges take place in these systems, and so it's a neat way of identifying essentially two timescales. There's a third one that defines the equilibration timescale, but the two important timescales here are wall and binary collisions. So wall collision events are like when gas particles make collisions with the nanopore walls, and so these are, if you like, local equilibration events. And by the way, in the real materials, there could be many gas particles within a single nanopore, and so they would have to equilibrate within this kind of toe sub wall a collision timescale. And then there's a subsequent timescale, a larger one, which is the timescale that characterizes energy exchange events. So when, in my models, when two particles from different nanopores, neighboring nanopores, of course, will make a collision, and thus letting energy move from one nanopore to another. Now, if we had mass transport, like you did last time, we could think of toe binary as characterizing hopping rates, and I'll come to that in a simple mass transport system. But so the idea is that you have local equilibration without energy exchange, and that's characterized by this timescale. And then there's a timescale that characterizes the the rate at which energy, in this case or mass, would move from one cell to another. And I will try to convince you that there's an easy way for us to control the separation of timescales in our models. And so what we'll be able to implement is separation of timescales, and so the local thermal equilibrium, and from it we want to deriving Fourier's law. And so that's essentially the program. Now, the kind of material I have in mind is this, and that's my idealization of an aerogel, if you like. So this is a three-dimensional version, and we have so the cell here is represented by those it's like these cylinders that form a trap in a cube-shaped trap, and so the ball here it's a hard sphere. It interacts with the walls through hard-core collisions, and so now the idea is that the openings here are small enough that the particle is trapped inside the cubes, but then still it can sort of move up above the opening, and if there would be another such trap above, then this particle might interact with a particle similarly trapped in a cell above this one, right? So what if we visualize this, this is how it goes. And so now I'm looking here at a 4x4 system with periodic boundary conditions, and we've arranged the geometry so that there are some collisions, that collisions are possible among the neighboring gas particles, but of course each particle is trapped inside their respective cells. And I'm not sure when the collisions take place, but hopefully we'll see them. Now there's a color coding that, so red particles are somehow hotter than blue particles. Okay, so that's the idea. What we saw here, exchange of energy. I mean, you can spot them if you pay attention, but you see that. So in this situation, it would be a system reaching equilibrium at fixed energy, which is the sum of the temperatures in all those cells. Now we could think of, so this would be like a microcanonical equilibrium ensemble, but of course you can think of such a system as being much larger and interacting with thermalized walls or what have you in terms of non-equilibrium boundary conditions. And usually when I speak about non-equilibrium boundary conditions, I mean thermal walls, but people might like to look at different ways of implementing those boundary conditions. So these are the models, and the idea here is that because, I'll come to that, but there's a way to set the geometry of those cells so that collision events among neighboring particles become rare, and in that limit you can basically forget about the dynamics, and then what you wind up with is, this is how it goes. Then, instead of having a description of particle dynamics, all you're left with, if you're coarse grain, if you like, is an energy variable per cell. And so the dynamics of the energy exchange, which takes place on a long time scale, when you're able to sort of blur out the particle dynamics, you come up with this description in terms of energy variables. And so the energies here are exchanged among neighboring cells in a way that, of course, they are being conserved locally, right? And the energy exchange process actually takes place in a way that mimics the hard sphere collisions among neighboring particles. And so what I will tell you is how one is able to derive such a... So this is a stochastic system that describes energy exchanges. You have to choose at any time a pair of cells that will exchange some random amount of energy. And so this is basically what you're seeing here, and these are periodic boundary conditions. So you see that this column here, one before last, is the same as this one, and the same with the other boundaries, right? So you'll see that there's a fair level of fluctuations. Yes. So blue is like very small. You see here 0.03, and like yellow is. So this. Well, what I'm saying is I've just repeated this row here over there. So you think of this as on a torus, if you like. Yeah, these are periodic boundary conditions. So it mimics the same kind of equilibrium system that I had on the previous slide. No, not quite, because you there's a rate of change of energy that is fixed, in fact, by the energy. So the rate at which energy exchanges take place depends on how much energy two cells have. And so the dynamics is really, is really that of the Hartree system in some limit anyway, and I'll come to that. So that's the upshot of the talk. And so now what I would like to do is start off with a simple description of mass transport in Sinai billiards that we heard about already. And so I'll, this overlaps with some of what Lai Sang talked about yesterday, and I'll try to explain why, in fact, I like the small opening limit, why it's useful, and from there I'll explain the derivation of this stochastic model for the heat transport, and we'll see how much time I have, and I might tell you more about there's a part of the talk here that. Is about studying this. So once you have this stochastic dynamics for energy exchange, you can study the its transport properties, which is this third part of the talk, and then go back to the billiard dynamics and actually try to make a comparison between the sort of this limiting behavior that takes place in the stochastic system and what we can really observe in the billiard systems. So I want to start with these Sinai billiards. So the context here is something that probably many of you are aware of. We take a periodic Sinai billiard, and so this system is known to be diffusive so long as the horizon is finite, so that there are no ballistic trajectories in the system. And this was proven by Bunimovic and Sinai, and we heard about this already. And what I'd like to talk about is the Martha-Swanczyk approach, which is a sort of a more physics, and it tells you it's a way of computing, in fact, the diffusion coefficient for these billiard in some limit. And I'll try to make that clear in my own wording. But essentially, this is whatever I'm going to say is related to what Martha and Swanczyk did. And so my favorite model of this is this one, and so it's kind of similar to what Lai Sang was saying, that what we do here is we take, if you like, we put up some walls in between those billiard cells, so that we have a new parameter delta here that allows us to monitor the rate at which a particle that starts here will hop from one cell to a neighboring one, and so on and so forth. And so I can reduce this parameter, and of course when the parameter is zero, the particle is trapped, but if it's small, it's going to be trapped for a long time, and then it moves to a neighboring cell and so on. And so I'm advertising here some papers that where we studied some finite size effects in such billiard systems. The idea here is in order to, that we can set up a intermediate time scaling, so there's going to be, I'm going to assume a separation of time scaling effect. We'll reduce the Liouville dynamics. So this is a phase-space variables here, which I'm representing in terms of the lattice variable position within the cell and the velocity of the particle. I want to reduce it to a local equilibrium, so when the density is sort of smeared uniformly above the cell, and then from there we go to a macroscopic variable in some limit. And this is essentially what we obtain here is a Fokker Planck equation at the macroscopic scale, where the diffusion coefficient is given in terms of, so this is basically a dimensional prediction, where the length scale squared, so that's the separation between the cells, is divided, the distance, right, between the center of the cell, neighboring cells, of course, is divided by the time scale tau, which is basically the amount of time that a particle remains in a cell before it hops to a neighboring one. And this is it's an average, of course, time. And so this is the Martha-Swansea approximation, that there is a limit where the diffusion coefficient is given by this this ratio, and it's basically a dimensional prediction. And in that sense, the reduction to a local equilibrium is useful because it not only it says that the system is diffusive, but it tells you what the diffusion coefficient is, and so you can extract the physics of the transport process through this this limit. Yeah, well, it's any of them. Yeah, we'll get to that. Okay, so you can set up this is the kinetic equation for this this billiard, so there is this inside cell dynamics where you have collisions with fixed discs and flat walls, right? And I've separated from this the jump events, which correspond to a particle going through one of those open slits, moving from cell to cell. And so this is an exact description of the billiard dynamics, and you can try to solve this this pseudo-Liouville equation, or else you resort to some kind of approximation. And so the idea is that, of course, the local equilibrium distribution, which is if I integrate out the internal degrees of freedom of the particle being trapped in cell N, then this local equilibrium distribution changes only according to the jump events. So it's invariant under everything that's inside these brace brackets, and it's going to change because of the particle jumping from one cell to another. And so this operator, you can basically write down. I mean, it's easy to write down its expression, and of course it occurs. I mean, you have to take into account the fact that some particles jump in and some others jump out. And so that's the idea. Now you asked me this question about you need to have that the local equilibrium distribution is indeed solves this part of the Liouville operator. And so you can give me any dynamics that you like, so long as the uniform distribution is the natural invariant measure for this system when there is no opening between that would allow the particle to jump from cell to cell. So I'm only assuming here that there's a uniform equilibrium distribution if I ignore the jump event. So velocity directions, of course, the energy does not change, right? So it's elastic collisions. So it's uniform over the directions of the momentum, and so in that case, I mean, in that sense, I don't think that polygonal billiard dynamics will do, because you have to be careful about the way, I mean, the different directions that the velocity can have. I'm not sure. I'd rather have dispersive billiard dynamics, and this is what you get. If I do what numerically? Well, you can do it. I mean, I haven't done it. But I'm sure it's interesting. But that's not been part of my own program. So. So now you see, if I want to solve this equation, I have a problem, because of course the local equilibrium distribution evolves according to internal degrees of freedom, and now I would like to close this equation in order to solve it. And so the way to close it is the most simple one, is to say everything is uniform, and that's what Lifeline was saying yesterday. And so if I replace this internal distribution which depends on the internal degrees of freedom by a uniform one, then my Liouville equation reduces to this equation here, which is in fact a continuous time random walk for the density of particles in one cell. And then it has I've written this down, that there's an exponential distribution for the waiting time. So the idea is that the particle will stay for some time, and the clock goes exponentially with the rate tau sub j, which I've written down here, and that depends on the velocity of the particle and the parameter delta here, which is the opening between the cells, and so that's the area of the cell here. Now, then you ask, of course, when does this condition, when does it make sense? Of course, that's where you need the delta to be small, because you're basically saying that you'll have a convergence to this uniform distribution before a jump event occurs. But if, I mean, if you do that, and if this is a fair game, say, then it's basically trivial to go from this mesoscopic description to a continuous to a macroscopic description, and then you have your final result that the diffusion coefficient is basically this Martes-Fonseca approximation. So, okay, now that's the property of the master equation. I'm saying that the Billiard can be reduced to this in some limit, and so I want to show that numerically you can verify whether this is true or not. The first thing is that the so I'm here plotting the, so this is the inverse time here, basically V delta, and so it's a linear function of delta, and you see that this is this holds for whatever delta you have, and that's what you expect, because it does not, I mean, this expectation value of the time that a particle stays within the cell does not depend on correlations that may persist. It's just a result of ergodic theory. And so that's the first thing. Now, then the Martes-Fonseca approximation tells you that the diffusion coefficient in those units should be 1. And then you can see, of course, that it's only going to be 1 in the limit when delta is very small. And so I'll come to finite size effects that we have here in a minute, but before that I want to say that you can also look at the waiting time distributions and how they change with the parameter, and so this also allows you to verify whether the master equation, the continuous time random walk, is a fair description of the Lorentz gas here. You see in particular that when this is very big opening, so it's still a diffusive system, but then you don't have a probabilistic description of the system like the one I've advertised, and you really have to go to this limit where the opening becomes small enough. In fact, so it's a bit funny, right? Because you see that the second value here gives you an exponential, and then you let it decrease, and so the distributions will somehow raise and then lower again, and so it's really in the limit where this delta is small that you can see an exponential. And so one test that I've I'm showing you here, which was, yeah. Yeah, this is just a probability distribution for the waiting times. So I'm taking a histogram of right, the time it takes.
But the question is, for where did that table, what is where?
This is the same Billiard table than the one I showed, so over here, this one.
So what were our sizes of the disks?
Yeah, delta. It's fixed. That's one of the things that this system is useful, because you never change the local dynamics. I'm only changing the delta, and so the chaoticity and everything of the Billiard is always going to stay the same. So, and in particular, when I do the simulations, I'm carrying out a simulation within a periodic box. And so it's always going to be the same parameters. So I'm asking that it has finite horizon is basically what I want.
It's a 0.5.
Oh yes. There's just so if I put many tracers, they would not interact. Yeah, what I'm saying is it's basically periodic from one cell to another. I mean, you have to. No, not because of delta. No, it's just a reflection on a wall, right? So it's like a winding number, if you like. I mean, I don't know. Let's see. I'm looking for. I mean, this reflection here, for instance, corresponds to if you would let your particle, so you can flip the cell, and so. Yeah. So not quite. I mean, the point is that the reflection on the wall is equivalent to a reflection of the Billiard along this line, right? So. Well, it does, but it does because of jump events, right? So that's what you see here. What I'm telling you is I can compute, I mean, with the formalism that I've sketched, I can only compute this limit, and I don't know about what goes on here. I will show you in a minute that we can do something about this, but yeah, of course it's a complicated, and that's the whole point of the game. That if you don't have, so let me say words that this corresponds to, I'll say, effective separation of timescales when the diffusion coefficient is one for all practical purposes. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So in fact, what you're seeing here is indeed that there are correlations between the successive jumps, and I mean, if there were no correlations, then everything would be exponential because it's always a fixed kinetic energy here. Yeah. In fact, it is, but. Right, but you see that these wiggly shapes, they probably have to do with the fact that successive events take place in, I mean, I... Agreed. Okay. But no, I agree with that. But what I would just like to say is that you observe here is that the relaxation process, if you like, I mean, corresponds to whatever the master equation tells you. And this is another test, so that was suggested to me by Raphael Lefebvre. So what I'm looking at here is a sort of a sorted. I'm taking samples of size 10 in my waiting times, and I sort them. And so the order statistics of this I can compute with the exponential distribution would be so that this is like. The largest in a sample of 10, in average, will be around 3, and so the smallest, and so on. And you can see that as the parameter delta goes to 0, this becomes more accurate. Now, this was a small sample, and you can see some deviations, and I don't want to dwell into this. I mean, but it's just kind of the idea is that in this limit where delta goes to 0, your billiard will behave in the way that the continuous term random walk describes. Okay. Yeah, and so I wanted to say about finite size corrections. Now, of course, when delta is not so small, so in the picture I showed you, we were in this range. Now, with David Sanders, we've studied what we call persistent effects, and so memory effects, and you can consider the hopping process instead of being memoryless will depend on which cell you visited in the past. And so if you have, so ignore the red and the green curve here, but the black curve shows you, ignore the black and the red. The green curve shows you what happens when you keep track of a, look, I don't know, I think the black curve shows you, but it doesn't matter really. So the magenta curve anyway, shows you that what happens when there are two steps of memory that you take into consideration here. I think the black curve is one step. So anyway, the point is that you'll have a nice approximation as you go down. When you have just one step of memory, you can account for whatever goes on in this region, and you see it here. I'm not sure whether it's the green or the black line. And then the magenta line shows you that you can extend this range of validity of your approximation if you take into consideration more steps into your hopping process. And so this, one has to compute this diffusion coefficient, and this is what we did with David in this work. I'm happy to discuss this further if anybody has questions. But what I'd like to do is now move on to how much time do I have left? Okay. Right. So let me now move on to the heat exchange system. And so what we have here is a two-dimensional description. I'll say things about two-dimensional, three-dimensional systems, but the mechanism is essentially the same, right? So these are kinetic energy variables, And as collisions occur, these variables change, and so this is the kind of billiard which I would like to study now. And so I want to show you that the same, basically the idea is that the program which we carried out in the mass transport system can be transposed here, only it's more difficult, of course. Okay? So to put things in context, the our contribution is essentially, I mean, is maybe related to the physics and the parameters of these systems, but the credit should go to Carangelo Liverani and collaborators here, Bunimovic, Pellegrinotti, and Suhoff. They studied these systems and they were able to show a main theorem on the, well, can I say ergodic properties of these systems? I mean, if you want to jump in, feel free. Okay. All right, but so the physical context, I mean, the idea of it came from, I think I was in Paris, I heard Antti Kuppiainen speak about similar systems, and so we were motivated by these works to study these systems. And so now, how does one reduce the billiard dynamics to a stochastic system for energy distribution? Well, you first realize, of course, that there's a free parameter here. If I fix the radius of these disks, I can play with. So this is a pointwise particle colliding on a hard disk, and they must overlap so that the particle is trapped here in the cell. But this system is equivalent, in fact, to this system, where I've sort of split the radius rho between the moving particle, which has radius rho sub m, and then the fixed disks, which now have radius rho sub f. So what I'm going to do here is I'll fix the radius rho, and it will have to be in this range so that there's overlap, and then there's a sort of positive area in the billiard so that a particle can move. And then I can play here with the rho sub m parameter. And that's useful because it will, in fact, allow us to reach this separation of time scales that we need. And one thing that you can compute, which is irrespective of this parameter, is the collision. So it's similar to the time scale that we had for the jump event. The time scale here is fixed by the area of the billiard divided by its perimeter. And so it's a parameter that's the wall collision frequency that I've talked about earlier. Interaction between the particle and whatever solid matrix we have that traps it. Now, if I play with this rho sub m and I make it large, then I can go up to this limit where, of course, there will be many interactions between the particles, and many more, in fact, than with the walls. And so that's actually a limit where, I mean, I want to move away from it because it's the propagation of heat through the system will be very fast, and it has finite heat conductivity, but my models are not able to say anything about the heat conductivity, sorry, in this limit. So the limit I'm interested in this one, where so we kept the same rho, so the local dynamics is always the same, but we reduced the rho sub m, and so here there is a possibility that energy exchanges take place, but in fact they do not, or at least not on the time scales that we see here. So that's basically, it's the basic idea here that by changing rho sub m, we can monitor the rate at which collisions between neighboring particles take place. And so there's a critical value in particular where below which they do not occur. And that critical value, of course, corresponds to this value of the parameter where you have the only possibility that an energy exchange takes place is when you have a head-on collision. And so that's a singular limit, of course. But if rho sub m is close to this limit above, then you have a small probability that these exchanges take place. And this is where we are in business. And so there's in this sense, it's an easy way of separating time scales between collision frequency and wall collision frequency. Okay, so let me not say anything about this. But I'd like to come back to, I mean, if you have questions about the Lyapunov exponents for these systems, it's quite interesting, in fact. So now, I want to implement this program. The idea is, well, it's the same thing that we had before, right? We have a pseudo-Liouville equation here. There's the cell dynamics, which are described by these terms, and binary collision events are taken care of by these operators B. And so the local equilibrium distribution here is invariant under this part of the Liouville equation, and will change only according to the collision events. And so if I assume, if I make a closure approximation for the P, then I can write down a continuous time equation for the exchange of energy, which is the so master equation that we have here, that tells you, so these are the number of pairs of cells. Well, we're summing over all the cells, and when A and B are neighbors, they can interact. And so eta here would be the amount of energy that two particles exchange, and you have a gain term here and a loss term, basically. So that's the structure of the master equation. In particular, yeah, it should be obvious that the, I mean, if P is a function of the sum of its arguments, then it's going to be an equilibrium solution. So that's the first thing to notice, of course. Now, the computation of W, you can do it. I mean, it just comes out of the analysis, and it's neat because the geometry of the cell is captured in these terms, and they decouple from the remaining part here, and so this part is just collision between hard disks in this case, and we would have a similar formula if these were hard spheres or higher dimensional spherical objects. So there's a complete separation of between the geometry and the so say the nature of the collision events, if you like. And so let me say this is the volume of the cell, and there's a parameter, well, whichever phi here. Yeah. So this integration here is basically the integration of the positions of the center of mass of the two particles. And then phi d is the angle that the two particles make with respect to the horizontal at collision. So in fact, though the formula is a bit complicated, it's really very natural. You have that the energy in the first cell is fixed to that amount, and this is the other one, and that's the amount of energy that you exchange. And indeed, it corresponds to an exchange of momenta in the collision longitudinal to the line segment that joins the two particles. So you can compute if you absorb this into, say, the time scale of the master equation, you can compute the kernel W, and so this is what you get. In fact, if you have a two-dimensional process and it's the collisions between hard disks, this is the formula, and so the kernel has this form. And you can also derive a kernel for the three-dimensional spheres. It turns out to be simpler, and that's just a result of the dimensionality. But indeed, it is the kernel, and so you're not going to find something else. So long as you play with hard spheres or hard disks, and so the, of course, the point is that you need to have a geometry that allows one to make this closure approximation that gives you the master equation. But once you have it, then the dynamics here is just a result of the hard-core collisions between the particles that carry the energy. Okay? No. It does at the level of the separation of time scales, but it does not here. Like I said, the geometry is here, in fact, but everything that remains here is. I'll come back to this question because I'll have some slides about the computation of these geometric components of the process. So let me come back to this later. I'm not sure how much time I will have. You let me know when I have 5 minutes left. Well, thank you. Okay. All right. So you can compute the binary exchange frequency from the master equation. It's just the expectation of, I mean, the equilibrium distribution with respect to the energy exchange event, sorry. And so this is a microcanonical distribution. This is the equilibrium marginal for two particles. And then you can compute this. So the time scale is fixed here so that the frequency of collisions is square root of t plus some order 1 over n corrections. And this is a simulation of the master equation. So you can see that it works perfectly well. Now, one wants to compute the heat transport. And so the way I'm going to describe it now is through computation of the... So I'll assume that I have some say, one-dimensional lattice and some boundary conditions that fix energy at both ends to some so different values, and there's going to be a gradient of temperature. And so it's also a general formula that the current between the two cells will depend on this integral. And so it's the expectation of the amount of energy that's exchanged. And so the local temperatures now, of course, are defined with respect to these one-side marginals. And what you would like to show if you're going to derive Fourier's law is that you have this formula for the heat current. So these are my boundary conditions. And if I do, I call this a Boltzmann-Katz approximation, a single, if the, well, if I assume that the single cell distributions are given by a local thermal form like this one, then you can see that if you plug it into the master equation that you get delta t squared corrections. And so to order delta t, this is the stationary state that you have for at least for the one cell distribution. But of course, when you compute the heat current, you need the two cell distribution. So that's where things get more tricky, of course. And so to tackle this problem, we also made use of a BBGKY hierarchy. And so the question that we had was, can we factorize the two-cell distribution? In fact, you cannot. And if you could, you would have to satisfy this equation. This would have to be an equality. And this only holds when the current has a gradient form. So in these systems, it's not the case. This is a technical issue, but it's an important one. So we picked up, in fact, order of delta t corrections at the level of the two-cell distribution. So it's not just the product of single-cell distributions. But then it turns out that, and so this is the analysis again, and I'm not going to dwell into the details of it, but so this Q function, which represents those corrections, is in fact symmetric with respect to its arguments and does not influence the energy current here. And so once you realize it, then you can compute the heat conductivity through this simple formula, and you retrieve. And so in that sense, it's the same result that we had for the mass transport. The heat conductivity is up to a dimensional factor here, given in terms of binary collision frequency, and so it's a dimensional prediction, essentially. Though it's, of course, it's more complicated because we have that all the cells are coupled, but this is the end result that you get. No, I think I'll have to skip on most of it, so maybe we go back to this if you have further questions about the geometry. So these are the integrals that we compute when we want to compare the Billiard dynamics to the master equation. And so it's the result of a numerical computation of the heat conductivity and its ratio to the binary collision frequency. When the parameter goes to the critical value, you see it going down to 1. Now, there may be some corrections, of course, and mind you, we remain away from the limit because it's actually difficult to get there from a numerical point of view. Just to mention this work with Raphael, where we also did the same. So you were asking this question about the dynamics in the local dynamics. So if you have polygonal dynamics here, then essentially the result remains the same, that in some limit where separation of time scales occur, you have that the heat conductivity is given in terms of collision frequency between neighboring particles. And so I can stop there. Thank you for your attention.